This is the Perfectly Mentored Podcast with your host, Jason Portnoy.
Woohoo, live on a, well, I guess, you know, sometimes these episodes come out later. So I was going to say on an Easter Monday, but I mean, maybe you're watching this or watching this in like June and you must be thinking, what is this guy talking about? Where does he live? And it's like a Thursday here. So where does he live that just the holidays are way off and the days are like way off? Like that's a bad time change. So, but however you listen to this or whenever you listen to this, welcome. I'm joined with Megan. Say hi, Megan.
Hi. Hi, everyone.
All of a sudden she's camera shy. She hijacks the show for the last 3 weeks and now gets a little bit camera shy.
There's still time.
We got some exciting news. It's a great weekend, and tomorrow a very, very special day that I'm very excited about. So again, depending on when you're looking at this, but House of Bricks, my new book. I am an author, which is harder than it sounds, right? I mean, everyone's like, just write a book, and I'm you know, it's hard, especially when you're going to write something around like e-commerce and then even have a chapter when it comes to like paid ads. It is hard. So, I mean, let's do something fun. If you're watching this, comment below, comment with a replay, comment with a question, comment with something, and, you know, we'll send you a free gift. Actually, let's make this cooler. Come to the launch party. And if you show that you bought a copy of the book, which is going to be insanely, insanely affordable to start off when we launch tomorrow, if you come on and show me launch, I'll send you a hard copy book. We'll sign it for you and send you some goodies and a little bit of swag. Yeah. How's that? I don't want just like a comment and then you win something. Like let's make them work for this. This is a book. Uh-huh. This is a book. This is my blood, sweat, and tears that went into that. I'm just not gonna hand it away because someone wrote replay or cool or
why don't
I'm
you watching. Have it on display? Like right thought we talked about this. It's gonna be right beside your face.
Right here. Oh yeah, we talked about it for a little while.
Right there.
We'll do the whole live like this.
Yeah.
Oh, let me find you the answer. That's in chapter Welcome to the Ask Jason Show. Chapter 3, we'll go into that. And maybe next week we don't do an Ask Jason Show. I'll just read the book. Maybe people just want to do like the live reading, like Perfect. Masterpiece Theater or whatever that was called. And be like, Chapter 1, Introduction. Mm-hmm. I don't think they care about that. But we are very excited about this. This is a lot of hard work, and I think it's going to change a lot of lives. And writing it, you know, it's a very hard thing to do to condense your knowledge into writing a book. So for anyone listening to this who's written a book, kudos to you. Hopefully it was an easier process for you than it was for me. And anyone thinking about writing a book, as much as I say the process was hard, it wasn't as hard as I thought it would be. So it wasn't as easy as I thought it would be, and it wasn't as hard as I thought it would be. But go ahead, get your knowledge out there, change the world, make better businesses and humans. That's our mission. And that is it for me, Megan. Let's just go into the show.
Okay. All right. First question is from Seth. Do you think more products are sold from Facebook ads on mobile or desktop? And why? Desktop computer. Why?
It's a good question. It's a very good question. I think there may be some difference in stores. I also think the age of who you're selling it to will probably make a difference in there as well. Like older people may want to shop on computer versus their phone. Little 40s, right? We don't have to give exact age, but the truth is, I'd much rather buy something on my computer than on my phone. So like I'll see something unless I like it's really, really simple for me and I see it and I know I've been through the process before. I always like it just on a bigger screen and I like to look at it again. So that's my behavior. I think there's two kind of questions in there is where what's considered a purchase, right? So meaning where does that purchase sequence start? Because if they buy on desktop, that's fine. But where did they first see the ad? Did it come from a desktop ad and then they clicked and went to buy? We know that it takes multiple touch points for someone to actually buy something. So I would say for the most part, most journeys would probably begin on mobile. Just we're on mobile for social media. Like there's just so many different things that that can contribute to that. But I would say the experience probably starts mobile, and where it ends could end in a social media app, could end on a desktop, could end on your phone, could end, you know, with you searching Amazon and looking for a similar for that product to see if you could buy it on Amazon. So we try to be so black and white with where does it begin, where does it end? But you look at how advertising works, it never really works like that. There's like 17 touch points between they see your brand and then they buy. So I just want to be everywhere. So if the question's where should I optimize the most for, it's everywhere.
Okay.
But I would go in with a mobile first, obviously.
I own an ad agency and we are really trying to go after our ideal client and avoid any bad apples. What is the number one thing I should look for in a potential client to achieve this? This is from Lee.
I would make a list of what your ideal client looks like down to a T. What is it about them? I'd look at your best clients and be like, what is it about them that we love? Go through each client and then try to find commonalities. And then those become like your benchmarks for your best client. Then you have like your second best client. You know, I have a mentor who calls them ICP1s, ICP2s, or ideal client profile one. That's your top tier. That's your dream. And then you have number twos. Most of us live in the number twos where it's like, okay, you know, they're not perfect, but enough to like, we could work together for a long time. Then threes is where we mostly suffer and we pick, you know, clients that, you know, we think we could help, but they're coming with headaches and whatnot. And we probably shouldn't be dancing there as well. And then fours are just, you shouldn't even touch. So start to making a list and going through that and then having, you know, what your red flags are. What are the red flags? What kind of questions can you ask to solicit answers, whether you could find their red flag or not? And we tweak this. I think with every client we onboard, Megan, we probably do a revamp of the onboarding process and the questionnaire in, because we're like, oh, this guy got through the cracks, right? How'd this guy get through the cracks? Everything seemed good. All right, maybe we skip something here and we put in this question, and this question will kind of help identify. But I mean, even that, you could have the client who fills out everything, who clicks that they understand everything, who they understand how the process works. They're on board. You walk them through it 1,000 times and they're on board. And then when it starts, like they just switch. Mm-hmm. And they're like, I don't like any of this. It's like, well, we spoke before we even signed an agreement of what this would look like. And you were on board, and then you sign an agreement of what this would look like, and then you sign an intake form on what this would look like. So, you know, just like contracts don't prevent you from being a shitty person. Like no contract's good enough to defend you on that, or defend against someone like that. You're always gonna have a couple of slip in, but I'm curious here your answer, Megan, because you deal mostly with client success. So what? I mean, you're probably closer to that touch point than I am.
Yeah, I mean, I think just as time goes on, you probably realize the kind of questions you need to ask.
What are some red flags to you? What are some red flags of bad apples to you that you've seen so far?
Mm-hmm. Well, I feel like we've kind of talked about this before, but maybe someone that's like a control freak, I guess. Or that would probably be the big one, or impatient, because in the beginning, you know, it takes a little bit of time to get things going, the setup. And, you know, I think sometimes people think day one, you know, right out the gates, there's going to be, the big results, you know, and that doesn't happen until a little bit later down the line.
Yeah, I agree.
Usually.
I agree. I think I'm just bred a little bit differently in the sense that I didn't start an agency from cool. I was like this marketing guy working for a company and I wanted to go start on my own. I actually had my own brand, and I'm from the belief mindset of like, if I had an agency that was getting me results, I would never want to talk to them. Just keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
I don't want meetings. Yeah. I don't need meetings for the sake of meetings. I don't need 1,000 reports. I just need surface high level stuff. But like end of the day, If things are good, I'm all in. If things are bad, I need to be able to have a line of communication to you and be able to come in and do things. And if I give you a result, if I'm like, hey, go bring in, you know, $1 million in revenue, but make the cost to acquire a customer under $100. Those are the two things for me. If we do that, we're golden. I'm super happy. I'm of the mindset, and this was the hardest thing for me to learn, right? So I'll talk to you. One of the hardest things for me to learn coming to the agency side and dealing with clients is I'm from the mindset, if we're getting you that goal, thank yous are the only things we should be hearing, right? Like when I had a clothing brand and I had sales reps and they were getting things, it was never, oh, maybe we should cut your commission by 0.5 because you're doing too well and we're making too much money, so you should make less money for your work and all that. And we see that like with agencies that charge percentage of ad spend. That's why we don't charge percentage of ad spend anymore, is that you know, you grow and they're like, oh, we're going to penalize you for growing us too big, right? So we don't want to pay you this much money, and we could find someone who's going to grow us also, but for a fraction of the price. So they leave, and my characteristics don't really match up well for a lot of agency clients, in the sense that I'm super loyal to a fault. Like I'll go, and this may not necessarily be a strength, but I'll go with someone a little bit too long. Like I'll work with someone a little bit past the point that we probably should have, just because I'm loyal. But at the end of the day, results are results. That's the only thing an agency is hired to do. So, you know, when I got into the agency work, and all of a sudden every client wanted to have a meeting and they wanted to discuss things, and you were a 0.2 differ from last week or those changes, it was like, it was crazy. And then it was like, cool, well, it's not my money, so who am I to judge? Right? When it's my money online, I could act however I want. But when someone's giving me their money, then I have to have this fiduciary responsibility. I have to have this different outlook that someone gave. Like, we have to remind ourselves sometimes when we run an agency is that if a client spent $100,000 on ads, they gave us $100,000 with trust to run their ads. That's huge. That's huge. And we lose sight of that sometimes. We're like, yeah, we're testing and we're doing things. Yeah, results dipped a little bit, but they just gave you $100,000, right? Like, so sometimes we just have to go back and remember the basics a little bit. But at the same time, sometimes you have to ask yourself, would they treat their financial advisor the same way, right? Do they get on a call when the stock market dips, you know, 1%? Do they get on a call and need to have 75 meetings with their stockbroker to talk about what to do? How are they going to change the strategy? How are they going to do it? Because it dips one day. Advertising is that one thing that, like, that one bad day and just shakes up everything. So I think there's perspective needed on both sides. And I think that was the hardest part for me, was that I just came in and be like, if we're getting results, what are we even talking about here? Like, you give us the goal, yeah, we're crushing it for you. Let's work together for the rest of our lives. This should be a permanent contract, right? This shouldn't be a 1-year contract. This should be a 10-year contract. Like, we've crushed it for you. We built this brand. And I guess I'm surprised by the lack of loyalty sometimes, even when things are great. And that's clients. That's why you're doing what you do, Megan, right? Is to make sure clients are happy, because we're dealing with human beings, and human beings are all different. And if I was the client, Megan would have the easiest time with me, because she'd be like, Jason, are you still breathing? Are you still alive? I'd be like, all good. Versus some other clients who are like, Megan, are you still breathing? Are you still alive? I haven't spoken to you in 20 seconds. So are like, die in the last 20 seconds. So that's that. Kind of off on a little tangent there, but I think it was an important one if you're an agency.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Okay. All right. This is from Jennifer. We've just launched a new clothing brand online, and it's only online. How frequently do you recommend that we post to social media to create brand awareness?
I mean, organic is great. I think it's great to post on social media, but how are they finding your page to begin with? You're a brand new brand. So I think it matters. I'd post as many times as you can, right? You have to populate that page, first of all. You have to have stuff for people to see when they come in there. You got to be testing different, you know, whether you want to test a hashtag strategy, whether you want to tag people, whether you want to try posting in stories. It's a hard question to answer, like how many times, because every day I read a different board. Oh, it's three times a day. Oh, it's one time a day. Oh, it's once a week. The algorithm, everyone has their, what the algorithm tells them, but no one's ever come out and said what the algorithm really wants, right? So it's just a bunch of people, you know, talking from their experience, right? It's not like they just made things up. It's like, oh, the algorithm favors us when we post 3 days a week. Oh, the algorithm favors us when we post once a month. So that's about that and more. What's the value you could possibly add to those people? But I think you're asking the wrong questions. Brand awareness isn't going to get built by building something no one will ever see. That's like asking, saying, hey, we're gonna get a booth at a trade show, and we're gonna go like in the back corner, and we're gonna build our booth. What color should our table be to create brand awareness?
Yeah.
Well, what color should the signs be telling people that your booth is over there? Those are the most important questions. So focus more on how are you going to drive people to your social media in the first place?
Mm-hmm. What are some ways to do that? Ads.
Facebook ads, shout outs, collaborations with people. You could do cross promotions on social media, influencer marketing. I mean, we have a whole checklist of tools that like I get this all the time, right? You know this, Megan, is we tried everything. You know, you tried three things out of possibly 100. And inside the book, there's actually a bonus that I give out ways that you could possibly grow without spending a dime on paid ads. But we also give out a checklist, a business success checklist, as a free gift inside here. Oh, and by the way, I actually changed something as a bonus, which I'm not even sure Megan knows yet, is you don't just get the bonuses, but I'm giving you access to a free community where you can come in and ask questions around the book. We'll go live. Megan will be in there. We'll bring in our media buyers inside there to help answer questions, but we're building a free community around the book as well. So yeah, buy the book. I always wanted to say that as an answer. Oh, you want the answer? Buy the book.
Now
I actually can. Now I can actually say,
yeah,
buy the book. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So what is the biggest misconception with launching an e-com store, and how quickly can I expect to see sales roll in?
Hey, Jason here. I hate to interrupt this episode. You're probably enjoying it so much right now, and thank you for paying attention to it and tuning into this episode. Look, the truth is I really need a favor from you. We really want to keep getting this in the hands of more and more people. So if you could do me a favor and head on over and leave a 5-star review, leave us a review, leave us some comments, share it with friends, spread the love. It would mean the world to me. As well, continue the conversation with me on Instagram at Jason Portnoy. Follow along there. Look forward to seeing you there. Thank you so much. Now let's get back to the episode.
Buy the book. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
although there is an answer to that inside the book. Repeat the question. What's the misconception about starting an e-com store?
Yeah, what's the biggest misconception?
That if you build it, they will come. Everyone starts their e-com store so excited. They guilty, right? Guilty. I've done this, so I could say it with experience and not just as an agency owner ragging on you know, people I see on calls or whatnot, or as a coach or a consultant. I'm talking like legit experience. You open up a store and you believe everyone will come. And if you build it, they will come. It is not true. And I built an expensive store. This before Shopify. I blew my money in building a website. I had everything. I invested in descriptions, in artwork, and getting things mocked up. And literally, I think I sold like 3 t-shirts. Like, talk about it. Giant loss. And actually, at the close up, I went to go take another job for around a year before I was like, hey, I kind of half-assed this and kind of did this backwards, because I was, you know, not entitled, but like I believe that, hey, this is a cool concept. I'm just gonna open the store, everyone's gonna want to buy it, and I'm just gonna tell a couple of friends, they're gonna tell their friends, and everyone's gonna start buying the stuff. It works like that if you're a Kardashian, but if you're just like you're just like regular old Jason here, it does not work like that. And friends are like, this is so cool, man. I'm like, yeah, you think so? They're like, yeah, can I get one?
Yeah.
And I'm like,
yeah, you can. There's a website where you could where you can get one. And they're like, cool, okay, so I'll check out the website and I'll make a list and send it to you. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's not what they teach you in business, right? Like imagine that. Like imagine like your friend's a dentist and you're like, oh, you clean teeth? Awesome, man.
Yeah.
I love some clean teeth. Oh, that's cool. Come see me. Cool, I'll come see you. Yeah, just pencil me in and I'll take some teeth whitening too on top of it.
Right? Like, yeah.
Like it doesn't work like that. So so friends and family are like the worst people to judge when you start an e-com store, because like family loves it. Like I have a brother-in-law who literally wears, all he wears is that old brand. So he has like when I closed up shop, like he like raided everything and got the pick, and I gave him a bunch of swag for sure. And that's all he wears. And I'm like, man, if I had, you know, at the time of starting, if I had like 10,000 use, like I'd be one of the biggest brands in the world right now. Mm-hmm. And he goes, no, you'd be broke because I haven't paid for any of these. I'm like, I'm like solid point. That's fair point. But yeah, so that, I think that's the biggest misconception.
And then the second part was, how quickly can I expect to see sales roll in? So
as quickly as you could tell someone buy my stuff and give them enough value to buy your stuff, you could expect to see sales come in.
Okay. All right. So my question of the week, why does Meta constantly change and reconfigure their system in regards to ads?
They're listening, Megan.
Yeah.
They're listening. We are getting penalized majorly right now because of this. Meta, this is not our belief. This is Megan's belief. And I'm going to correct, Meta is the best advertising platform. No, I'm just, I don't know. Look, I'm on social media and I'm on Twitter, and inside Twitter there's a lot of media buyers that I know and a lot of agency owners I know. And it's crazy because when something happens, we all kind of like alert each other. It's kind of like a way to keep on. So like, do you guys notice Meta changed this feature? Yeah, Meta changed that. Do you guys notice this button got moved? Yeah, this button got moved. Sometimes we don't even notice it. We notice it from someone else. Sometimes we post something and then other agency owners go and run with it. That's great. We all have to learn from each other. But it would be crazy how many things Meta does without the advertiser in mind. Meta, some may say rightfully so, some may say not rightfully so. I think it's a mixture. Meta cares about the user experience. That's it. The fact that you're spending $10 million on ads on the platform, they don't care. Because without your $10 million, their platform would still exist.
Yeah.
Without 10 million users or all the users, forget the number, without the users, their platform will not exist. Mm-hmm. So we have to understand that like when people are like, hey, I'm going to start an app or I'm going to start a community, how do I monetize it? How do I do that? You cannot monetize anything until you have the users. Once you have the users, monetization becomes easy. Because if ads shut down, someone else is going to be willing to spend $10 million to get in front of people, right? And there's almost like that death by 1,000 cuts here, because you have the big brands that are spending so much money on ads. And then you have so many small brands spending so little amount of money, they're spending maybe $1,000 a month, but they add up. You times that by like 100 million brands, that's $100 million a month being spent. So they're going to get their money. So they care more about the user experience. So how can we keep protecting the user experience? How can we keep the users on the platform longer? How can we do all this? And we're just their guinea pigs. The advertisers are just their guinea pigs. I mean, the users are their guinea pigs too, right? Like we are the product for social media apps. Mm-hmm. Social media is not the product. The users are the product. The data that they have on us is the product. So they're going to update and they're going to do things and it's going to piss advertisers off. Now, I wish, like, we can't, like, it's almost like we can't go to clients and be like, hey, there's a community of people on Twitter that all noticed that at 3 p.m. performance dropped. They're going to be like, I don't care what a community on Twitter says, which mm-hmm. makes it hard because Meta never gives support, like, in terms of, like, we had this happen. So when things bad happen in Meta world, then, you know, we notice it happens. We could all correlate with each other and be like, oh, look, yeah, look, it all adds up, but Meta will never issue anything. So we're kind of left in the dark as advertisers with clients. That's the one thing I wish they changed. The changes to the platform, I wish they gave us a little bit more notice. I wish they would give us a heads up. I wish they cared about advertisers a little bit more, but it's more the support going back to when you actually have, you know, something happen that you go do it. And it's not just as an agency to keep their job, which I think is important. So they could go back and tell their clients, look, it wasn't us, Meta, here's the report that happened, you know, here's what we did to solve it. But also, like, what if you don't have an agency? What if you're running this internally and you don't know? And you just start tweaking a million different things. You're not part of a community. You don't know. You don't have different ad accounts to look at and make it match up. You're just in a silo operating. So I think they should care a little bit more about the advertiser. So why do they make these changes? I'll loop it back out for user experience. That's all they're doing it for. It's all a matter of how do we make sure user experience goes. And they want to make their platform as friendly as possible. So they're going to keep making changes to it so that you don't need a big agency to come in, so that the regular person can go and wrongfully, because they don't know how to do it, but it's easy to do it, spend $100 on an ad, their first ad. And then they give that money to Meta and it doesn't get them any results, but they lost $100, but it made them super easy. They're like, see, we don't need an agency. Just this button, click big red button says boost post.
Yeah.
And everyone thinks, hey, look, I ran an ad, but yeah, that's not how it works. But that's a great question, Megan.
Yeah. All right. Well, that is it.
All right, everyone. See you next week. Tomorrow, launch, book. Go on my social media if you're watching this live or if you're watching this today. And this is Monday, April 1st. This is not an April Fool's Day. This is, I literally wrote a book. And it comes out Tuesday, 5 p.m. is a launch party. Would love to have you there. We'll put the link in the comments. But as always, Megan, thank you and happy Monday.
Hey, everyone. Thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed that episode. Thank you for your attention. And if you made it this far, you're clearly somebody who wants to take their business to the next level. You want to get better. And I understand that being an entrepreneur sometimes can feel like a little bit of a lonely journey, which is why being part of a thriving community of like-minded people is just so important. It was super helpful in my own development as well. And as is the ability to instantly get answers to the questions you may have in order to grow and scale your business. It's for that reason why I launched a consulting coaching program called the Market Domination Method. And guess what? If you're listening to this and you hear this, we're open for applications right now for new members to join. So to request an invitation or to book a free diagnostic call it a game plan call. I'll literally sit with you and demonstrate the value that we could bring to your business on that call. Let's jump on a call. We'll discuss ways you could possibly grow your business. Head on over to jportnoy.com, jportnoy.com. You'll find all the different ways we could work together. It's going to be the best business decision you'll make. So hope to speak soon. Head on over to jportnoy.com, book that free game plan call, and I look forward to talking to you soon.